the View My Seats podcast. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today to talk Tiger and Michelle Wee is the founder of GolfNewsNet.com, Ryan Belenji. Ryan, bigger story today. Tiger's return to competitive golf or Michelle Wee winning her first major?
It's got to be Michelle Wee going away just based on purely based on democracy and what people are searching on Google today. It's Michelle Wee, because there are a lot of people searching Michelle Wee on Google right now because Golf News that is blowing up. So I think that's at least what people seem to think. That's the bigger story. I mean, she's been in the public spotlight for basically 12 years of her life, half of her life at this point. And for her to make that breakthrough and actually do it before Annika Sorenstam did, who won 10 majors, before Lorena Ochoa did, who was number one in the world for a couple of years. That's just remarkable stuff. So I think she's definitely the number one story in golf right now.
And part of why we're talking about Michelle Wee is for once, it's about fulfilling that promise. For so long with Michelle Wee, it was all about when is she going to be the golfer that everyone expects her to become. And for a while there, it looked like she was never going to fulfill that promise. And this year, it's tough to say a kid of 21, 22. How old is Michelle Wee?
24.
24 years old. It's really hard to say to give up on a 24-year-old golfer. But until her success this year, I think a lot of people had said that Michelle Wee was never going to be as great as we all expected. And now, with her win yesterday at the U.S. Women's Open, we're finally starting to see what we all expected from her. So what has made the difference for her and her this renaissance so young in her career?
I think part of it is that she is her own woman. She's 24. I mean, her parents still follow her around everywhere, but what else do they have better to do? She has kind of come into some stability in her life because she's her own person and she believes in what she's doing. She's stuck by what she's done with David Ledbetter, and it's turned out to be a positive for her. She's kind of eschewed the power game in many aspects that she could easily have played for years on the LPGA Tour and probably done pretty well, kind of like a Brittany Lincecum, in favor of learning how to hit different ball flights, high, medium, and low, hit it left to right, hit it right to left, basically hit all of the shots with confidence that you could conceivably need to win in golf. And that's big to be able to draw on in crunch time. I think we saw it especially yesterday after the double bogey at 16 and other times throughout the week where she just did not look panicked. She looked perfectly calm and understood that mistakes could be made and could be recovered. And for her to go on to 17 and then make the tournament clinching birdie, I think was a really telling moment for how far she has come as a golfer psychologically and also in terms of her physical capability. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. And on top of all that, as we talked about with Martin Keimer, she believes in what she's doing. The tabletop thing's weird, but it works great for her. She has found a caddy in Duncan French that she really likes to work with and is friendly with. She, again, believes in what she's doing with Ledbetter, even when people kind of poo-poo Ledbetter, and maybe rightfully so. But golf is all about consistency and doing what you believe in, and she's been doing that, and you've seen the results. I mean, this is her ninth top 10 finish this year on the LPGA Tour in 13 starts, and she's got two wins. So clearly what she's believing in is good enough for her because it's leading to wins.
I'm glad you mentioned Martin Keimer, because as when we spoke last week, we talked a lot about Keimer's disposition being really key to his win at Pinehurst. And you referenced that Michelle Wee, at the young age of 24, has the maturity to mentally overcome mistakes. I'm wondering if there was more to it than just simply mentally being able to overcome mistakes. It seems that some of the women, Michelle Wee included, really benefited from some inside information from the men having played Pinehurst the week before. Tell me, what do you think? How much of an effect did the U.S. Open, the men's open, have on Michelle Wee and her preparation for the Women's Open the following week.
Maybe it would have helped in terms of some minutia, kind of knowing how certain greens roll. I mean, a lot of the guys who were playing the U.S. Open gave their yardage books to women who were in the field, who were playing the same staff. You know, Nike staffers giving books to each other, for example. TaylorMade staffers giving books to each other. But in the end, I think the players would have figured out tee to green regardless. The big secret at Pinehurst is the green complexes, and that just takes time. And I think that maybe it would have been a 1 to 2 shot difference, maybe even 3 shot difference, but that would have been across the board, I think. I mean, there were plenty of players who were 20 over par for the week, and they made the cut. So maybe they didn't have the benefit of the yardage book, but still it does come down to talent and execution. And I think from tee to green, Michelle, we had a brilliant strategy. She knew she just had to hit fairways, and she was long enough, especially longer than her peers, that even if she kind of laid back a little bit off the tee to hit the fairway, she still had as much club or less club than her opponent or would-be opponents could have into the greens. And that's an advantage she could exploit almost in the opposite way you would expect a long-hitting golfer to be able to do. But an 8-iron in her hand is going way further than an 8-iron in Amy Yang's hand, and she knew that. And she knew that that could be a big advantage for her when it came to hitting greens and hitting fairways, which was the name of the game, and she did it. And I think that that was a strategy she probably came up with without the benefit of the U.S. Open or before the U.S. Open. She probably had a sense of what she needed to accomplish to be successful well before Martin Kaymer went and ripped the course apart.
Yeah, I think it was Jason Sobel on the Golf Channel who wrote about how I think it was Keegan Bradley or maybe Ricky Fowler. There's a group of, as you referenced, these people who play the same clubs or work out together. There's a group of them that I guess has bonded down in Jupiter, Florida. And there was some story on the Golf Channel about how maybe Keegan Bradley gave Michelle Wee some insight as far as yardage books go. But like you said, it ultimately comes down to execution. Let me rephrase. With the way the course held up for the women this past weekend, do you think the strategy of playing U.S. Opens, men's then women's on the same course is going to be something that both the USGA and LPGA consider in the future?
I don't know. I mean, I think they'll give it another shot somewhere down the line because it worked out really well. All things considered, outside of Martin Kaymer, there were, what, 3 players that broke par between the men and the women? And the course
is amazing.
I mean, the course held up great.
Yep.
It looked wonderful over the weekend for the women. In fact, it probably looked better over the weekend for the women than it did for the men, which I thought was pretty outstanding considering the way that Pinehurst number 2 is now maintained, that it could even look better than it did for the fellas. So I thought that was great. But I think that for that to work, the USGA has to have the full cooperation of the host club or the host resort or whatever they're going to be. So that's the real sticking point for doing this in the future. Can you find a club that's willing to host consecutive tournaments and basically give up their course for half the summer so that they can have this kind of these 2 prestigious events back to back? But I think if they do this in the future, they're going to go the other way with it because they've set this kind of permanent date for the U.S. Women's Open to be earlier in June to give it a little bit of a spotlight as a lead in to the U.S. Open. So I don't know how the USGA would feel about having the U.S. Women's Open, then U.S. Open going forward in tandem in consecutive weeks, because to be honest, the men are more likely to complain if the course is bad and they're in the second week than vice versa. I think the women had an expectation, because they always get crapped on, the LPGA does, that they were going to get crapped on and they weren't going to get the best course, but they were still going to get to play the same course, and that's kind of the same, kind of an improvement because you're on the same billing, same footing as the U.S. Open. But it turns out they got a great course as well. So I don't know how the men would feel if the reverse happens and it turns out that it's not as successful at the next venue. So I could see it happening again just because of how successful it was, but maybe there are only so many places where this can happen, and Pinehurst is one of them.
And the popularity of the LPGA can only be enhanced when Michelle Wee plays well. So Michelle Wee winning yesterday was not just a tremendous moment for her and her career, but it was also probably really good for the LPGA. Where do you see this going throughout the summer? Are we talking about Michelle Wee now potentially completing one of the most historic seasons in women's golf, or is this a flash in the pan?
I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I think that she finds, if she keeps the belief in what she's doing, and there's no reason not to, then she should be good for years. I mean, this should be the breakthrough season of her career, 24, where she realizes what she's doing works and that she has the mental maturity to be able to handle it all. So the next question is, all right, you've won a tournament in your home course in your home state, which you hadn't done before, at least professionally. You win a major championship, the most important in women's golf. You hadn't done that before. Now what's the next milestone? Well, it's to win multiple majors in a season, and she could accomplish that, which not many people have ever done, in a few weeks when she goes and plays the Women's British Open. So I think if you're riding the hot streak, and she clearly is, I mean, she's having an incredible season, there's no reason to believe why she can't at least be a contender. I mean, she was at 15 years old to win the Women's British Open. So she's got the game to be able to pull it off. In fact, more game now than she did 10 years ago to be able to pull it off. So I don't know. I mean, historic would be she wins the next three slams, and she wins 4 out of 5, which is still kind of weird, but 3 of the classic 4, 4 out of 5, the new 5 would still be pretty amazing. But just remember, NB Park won 3 last year and nobody gave a crap. 3 in a row, as a matter of fact, and no one gave a crap. So it matters for the LPGA because she still is the standard bearer for what moves the needle for women's golf. She's really the only player that does it other than Natalie Galbis or Paula Creamer, and that's even kind of to a lesser degree than Michelle Wee. So I think if Michelle can kind of embrace this and what's about to come her way for a whole lot of people who are casual observers of the game who are about to go, hey, finally she's going to become something, and that maybe doesn't feel an increased degree of pressure because all of a sudden people are on her side after maybe they kind of turn their back on her after all these years. I think she could have, an historic season, but I think she's going to have to pull up the rabbit out of her hat to win the next couple of majors for it to be truly historic compared to what was accomplished last year by NB Park or by others who have gone before them.
Well, I think we've already answered our question. And if the question was, is this good for the LPGA? It's certainly good for the LPGA because if Michelle Wee hadn't have won the Women's Open yesterday, we would not have been talking about the U.S. Open, the Women's U.S. Open for the first 15 minutes of this conversation. So it's obviously a very good thing for golf. You mentioned earlier how Michelle Wee has somewhat of a unorthodox style and swing to her now. I wonder if that gets in the way of either her popularity or perhaps her staying power, because her golf swing and putting stroke are not exactly what you would call smooth at this point. And my question is, can things fall apart quickly when your swing and putting stroke look that way?
I think so long as you stand by whatever you do in putting, I firmly believe that whatever works in putting is what you should do. It doesn't have to look pretty. It doesn't have to look technically brilliant. All you've got to do is get the club face square to the ball on the line that you want to hit it with the speed you've got to hit it. How you do that, I really don't care, and I don't think any player should care. And that works for Michelle Wee. I think it actually kind of makes it somewhat endearing in a sense that she's had to go through a standard putting stroke, the belly putter. She had it up her sleeve for a while. I mean, she's gone crosshand. She did the claw. I mean, she's tried literally everything and couldn't figure it out until she decided, forget it, I'm going to go low and tabletop it. And it's a stroke that kind of reminds me in a sense of Nicklaus and Palmer and even Billy Casper a little bit in the 50s and 60s, where that was kind of the style then, where you kind of hunched over a little bit at the waist, not quite as dramatically as Michelle Wee does, but hunched over at the waist, and you kind of got your face down closer to the ball, almost so you could feel like you could see the line. So it's a cool throwback, I think, more than anything else, even though it does seem weird by today's standards. And the swing, I think, is a Ledbetter kind of special, where think about it with Faldo, where he broke it down and filled it back up, and then all of a sudden you just kind of lost it. And that's the weird thing I think about Ledbetter, is there are just so many things to think about Ledbetter swing. It's not just one simple spread motion that it can kind of be easy. That's the thing I could see fall apart for Michelle Wee before anything else, is that she just loses the mechanics or just doesn't want to think about it anymore and gets into a situation where she wants to change teachers. But I don't think she's going to do that until she stops this hot streak that she's on, however long that lasts. So long as she's willing to put up with kind of the mental fatigue that comes up, that I feel comes with being a student of David Ledbetter's, she'll be fine. And I don't think that'll throw anybody off as a fan of hers, because I think they'll realize, kind of like with Tiger, who had an enormous power game and kind of gave up some of that to be able to pull off every shot in every situation, that's how you win golf tournaments. It's not overpowering things. That was what these players had to learn to be able to win at the highest level. Obviously, Tiger figured it out sooner and has figured it out more frequently than Michelle Wee, but that's pretty much what he figured out. And I think that's an endearing thing to fans, that she figured out what it takes to win. And she did it her way. She didn't do it with anybody else coercing her into it. She took the path she wanted to take, and she stuck by it, and eventually it obviously led to a great result.
Yeah, there is something very endearing about a woman winning a major championship putting like I do on the miniature golf course.
it looks ridiculous, but
there's a lot of appeal. I half expected to see some sort of windmill standing in front of the hole.
But I mean, you have to remember, she's a 6'1", almost 6'2" woman. She's as tall as I am, maybe a little shorter, but not that much. And you know, I putt very upright, not very upright, but fairly upright, and I'm a pretty good putter, but I have a lot of respect for the fact that she has found something that works for her that is the complete opposite of that. I think that's beautiful about golf, that there's not one right way to do it. It's kind of like baseball in that regard. There's not one right way to hit the baseball, because you're just going to fail most of the time anyhow. So you figure out what works as often as it can for you, and you go with it. And for her to have figured that out, that's pretty cool.
I don't mean to knock her, but I literally think it's fair for us to now use the expression right into the clown's mouth. So
I think she's kind of embraced it. I mean, she's made fun of herself all over the place, and that she's got this tabletop putting stance, is what she calls it. And I think that's great. I mean, it'd be one thing if we just laid into her and she kind of was defensive about it, but I think she's not that kind of person. I really, truly believe she's not that kind of person. She's a fun-loving, very curious, interesting person that ultimately is going to be a winner when she starts kind of having this media tour. It's going to start tomorrow in New York, where people are going to get to know the Michelle Wee that's a 24-year-old woman, not the Michelle Wee that was misguidedly trying to make the cut in PGA Tour events.
All right, moving on from one circus to another here. Tiger's coming back this weekend at his tournament. What are your expectations for the return of Tiger Woods after a long time away from the game following back surgery? What do you expect from him this weekend?
Nothing. I think everyone should expect nothing, because I think he's playing this tournament primarily because if he missed it and then made a comeback before the British Open elsewhere, it would look really bad for this tournament, because it would be the fourth time in eight playings that he had not participated, which is kind of bad for the guy who's supposed to be the unofficial host of the thing.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, he would have missed in 08 and 11 last year and this year. So that would have been four times in eight tries he wouldn't have played. So he would have won once in four starts, but he would have missed the others.
So you think the higher ups at Quicken Loans slipped Tiger's docker a note that said he's okay to play?
Well, I don't know that Quicken Loans had anything to do with it, but perhaps, obviously, it's the first year of their sponsorship. But the other part of this is that Congressional Country Club voted in a very strained vote. I mean, is very partisan to continue as host of this tournament every other year, because there was no way in hell they were going to have it every year. So Tiger got what he got, probably trying to promise to these people that he was going to play there. And if he doesn't play there, just after this vote comes, just after he shows up to the museum to announce that he's got this new title sponsor and that they're going to play every other year congressional. Mind you, the vote had not been done yet at congressional to assure him that that was actually fact. So if he goes out and says, well, I'm not going to play this year, my back's just not good enough, and then decides 6 days later he's going to go and play the Greenbrier Classic in neighboring West Virginia with Jim Justice's under-the-table appearance money, that looks really bad. So I think if he's going to make a start before the British Open, it pretty much had to be his own tournament, because otherwise he just looks awful. So I think that's why he's doing this. I think that's why he admitted to being rusty and why he's just looking to get back into the competitive mix. That's all kind of doublespeak for I've got to do this. So that's just my belief. I'm sure he will never say anything about it or anything otherwise, but the guy's always maintained that he only plays professional golf tournaments if he thinks he can win. And if he kind of admitted basically in his statement that he's going to play, I don't think I'm going to win, I'm rusty, then he had to be doing it for another reason, because that just kind of flip-flops on what we've been programmed to believe how Tiger Woods behaves and how he thinks. So I don't expect anything of him. I expect him to finish 36 holes, and if he makes the cut, he's going to finish 72 holes. That's what I expect. Other than that, I have no idea what's going to come out of it.
Are there other golfers who we can compare Tiger's return from back surgery to? I believe it was Retief Goosen who had a similar surgery to this. Are there other golfers who have battled back from this same type of back surgery, and how were their careers after coming back from this back surgery? In other words, Tiger has an unbelievable threshold for playing through pain and discomfort. We saw it so many times in the past with his knee and his Achilles and you name it, but the back caught up to him, and now he's had the back surgery. But anyone who's ever played any kind of golf will tell you, if your back is not feeling good, it really inhibits all parts of your golf game. So do we have any comp to kind of gauge how Tiger will come back from this, or is he just an anomaly when it comes to injuries and surgeries and returning to form?
I think Tiger overall is a freak, athletically, health speaking, where he just seems to kind of have a better recovery time than most at his age, whatever that age has been. In terms of a comparison, Goosen's reasonable, though he's kind of been out of it for 2 years, basically, almost going on 2 years, kind of just trying to feel his way back into things. And he's obviously not on the talent level of Tiger Woods. Then there's Graham DeLette, who's younger, but had a similar procedure. And he said it probably took him 12, 13 months to get back into the shape with his game where he wanted to be. And obviously, he has since played some of the best golf of his life after the fact. And he's a really good ball striker. I mean, he's got a world of talent, just can't putt for a lick. But so maybe that's the most recent comp that you have available to you, but there's never obviously been anyone at Woods' level with his kind of fitness and at the same time track record for injury where this has happened. So this is kind of uncharted territory for Woods, uncharted territory for golf. It's uncharted territory for him to come back less than 90 days after having the procedure done, which, I mean, typically this is a 3 to 6 month recovery period time. So he's doing it even before the earliest part of the window is open. So I find that really interesting. Again, kind of feeds the argument that this is political in nature. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it.
That makes me, now that you mentioned this window as far as returning to the game goes, it makes me very nervous to watch Thursday, Friday, because what I don't want to see as a fan is I really don't want to see Tiger Woods choking down on a 3-iron from the rough and just collapsing to his knees. That to me would just be a major bummer for golf fans in this country, and also for professional golf. I think professional golf is in a bit of a spot here because its popularity, at least its popularity on television, hinges on Tiger Woods returning to health. And I think this summer, in order for this summer to be relevant, I mean, people will watch the majors because the majors are the majors, but in order for other tournaments and the tour in general to be relevant, golf needs Tiger back, big time.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you whatsoever. I think it's pretty darn important that Tiger plays well, or option B, somebody comes along and starts ripping off wins 9 at a time in a season. And it's more likely Tiger's going to be around before the next person does that. So, that's as strange as that sounds. So, yeah, I mean, it matters. Tiger matters. He moves the needle, and people are going to start going to this golf tournament this weekend. I mean, the ticket sales here are going to go, have probably gone way up or going to go up. They may even sell out because Tiger's going to play versus last year in 2011. Not so much. And not so many people came in 11. Obviously, 12, we had the freak hurricane-like storm that basically shut off the weekend, where the weirdest tournament I've ever covered to walk with Tiger Woods, and there are like 8 other people with you right. while he's playing a professional golf tournament that he wins. And so he's actually won it twice in 4 starts. But, you know, I hate having to make that argument over and over again, though, because I think, in one sense, golf has kind of put itself in this position of relying on Tiger Woods, because they went to the well too many times to promote Tiger, and then just stop talking about everybody else. And they don't know how to talk about other players. I mean, they've fallen over Jordan Spieth, and then when he doesn't win, they say he can't close, instead of saying he's a 20-year-old kid who's going to be great someday. Then you have, you know, Rory, who comes along, wins 2 majors in consecutive years, each by 8 shots, and they love him, love him, love him. Then he signs with Nike, and he goes, oh, it's a terrible mistake, and he has a horrible year, and he's the worst guy on the planet. So
it's a fickle lot, golf commentators.
Yeah, I mean, it just – no one seems to stand by any one player for very long. And that just happened to Michelle Wee. That happened to Martin Keimer. Those were players that were supposed to be the next great golf superstar, and because they didn't turn out to be that right away as someone prognosticated it, they turned out to be thrown on the scrap heap pile, hoping that maybe someday they'll come back in some other form. And fortunately for them, they have. How they respond to that going forward, you never know. But yeah, I don't know. That's a long-winded way to say, yeah, I mean, Tiger's going to matter. The ratings are going to be up this weekend than they otherwise would have been were he not in the field. So that's good news for golf. But in the long haul, I think golf needs to get past this notion of one superstar player that drives all the ratings and everything's dependent on them. Because ultimately, the PGA Tour as an organization cannot survive if they just need one guy to be around, because he can't play 47 events. So they've got to figure out a way to make this thing work with 160 other guys with tour cards that may not be quite as popular or prolific champion.
When you have to fill 24 hours of airtime with golf talk, it leads to inane discussions about something called an it factor. And there was a discussion a few weeks back on the Golf Channel about who has the it factor amongst the young golfers. And like you're saying, people are so quick, fans and commentators are so quick to heap praise then turn on players when they don't perform well. The notion of an it factor, and there being any young golfer that can even come close to drawing the same kind of attention as Tiger Woods, is totally unreasonable and unfair. So that there shouldn't even be that discussion. But to your point, it would probably be wise for professional golf and the people covering golf to embrace the depth of talent out there, like you were saying, and to give a little bit more patience to some of these younger guys, like a Spieth, like a McIlroy, like a Keimer. And then you'll see perhaps a change in the way we think about popularity in golf. There's never going to be another Tiger, but there are a lot of really good golfers who people should enjoy watching on a week-in, week-out basis.
And this is going to get into a very brief race discussion, which is probably a way broader subject that needs to be assessed with more time later. But the next golf superstar, and let's just say for brevity's sake, it's Jordan Spieth because he's playing great. Let's say Jordan Spieth is the next great young golf superstar. He looks just like every other PGA Tour golfer. From Texas, he's a white guy. Talks like a white guy from Texas. Seems like a nice guy. He's probably going to do great. But guess what? He does not bring any kind of diversity to the sport versus its perception. So that's part of the problem of being the next great golf superstar, is that you're just like, you look and act just like everybody else, which is not what appeals to people. You can be a great champion and not appeal to the broader masses, because you just kind of look homogenous. Tiger obviously doesn't. He doesn't act that way. He doesn't look that way. And I think that was part of the appeal to people, is that he was so intense, and obviously the race component mattered, that he appealed to people because he broke the mold of what we thought a golfer could be, should be, should act.
Although to that point, and this is a discussion we should have and we will have at a later point. To that point though, Phil Mickelson doesn't transcend anything, and he is clearly 1A. As far as popularity goes. So the argument that the next superstar has to be represent something that we don't see all the time in golf, that might not be 100% true, because Phil Mickelson is, I would also say, almost like every other golfer. In fact, he's like, that's part of his appeal, is that he is so prone to, or has been in the past, so prone to these outrageous mistakes that we can all just empathize with, and that has been part of his popularity. But I get what you're saying as far as the it factor. The it factor probably, and I can't believe I'm continuing to use that because I don't even know what the it factor is, but it's probably a golfer who we don't even know about yet. It's probably some 10, 11-year-old kid.
You just nailed exactly what I was going to lead into, is that the same, and that is kind of the point about Mickelson as well. And you can go back to Palmer as a point too, is that whoever is having this discussion about, a serious discussion, non-ironic discussion, about the it factor and who has it is stupid, because the it factor is not bestowed on somebody. They earn it, and they earn the masses' respect for whatever reason. For Phil, it's because he's a kind of the gunslinger Arnold Palmer type who is very fallible. Arnold Palmer got it because he's just magnanimous and just exudes charisma. Tiger got it because he was just so intense and won so often. Jack got it because he just beat you over the head by winning so damn often that you had to kind of give in and like the guy. So people determine their reasons why they, in mass, why they like somebody, why they want to cheer for somebody, why they care for somebody. It has nothing to do with whether they're young or have the right look or they walk nice or whatever the hell that is. That's not, us talking about golf, we talk about it for a living, are not be the ones who decide who the next great transcendent golfer is. People determine that. And when that happens, we'll know it. Until then, we should stop talking about it, because we will get it wrong probably 5 more times until we get the right one.
Fair enough. So let's stop talking about it for now. Ryan Blangy, golfnewsnet.com. As always, thanks for your time. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, John.